All right, I'd like to introduce the first speaker, Alicia Kay from the... I can't read Keith's writing. I have no idea what it says. 60 Minutes in Greenfield, group of NA in the...
East End area.
Okay, thanks. I have no idea.
I'm
I'm Alicia, I'm an addict. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to speak. For anything... I need my water. Before I say anything else, I'm going to take a moment to pray. You can take it for whatever you need. So, like I said, I'm nervous. It's always an honor to be asked to speak for Narcotics Anonymous, but it's definitely not my favorite way to be of service. I do much better one-on-one or doing something like H&I, but I know when I first came around, I was hungry to hear what other people had to share and to hear, like, myself and other addicts, and I know the value of hearing that and, like, having that identification with other human beings and with other women in particular. The area where I first got clean, there weren't a whole lot of women. I joked a lot about it being a sausage fest, and that continues to be a theme. Like, most of the time when I walk into a meeting, it's predominantly men. And not to say that I can't connect with a man who's in recovery, but for me, like, that's difficult, you know, because we are different. As much as we say, like, we're all the same, we're all human, my experience is that we're different. Like, when I first came around, men preyed upon me. Like, I think it was, like, maybe the first or second meeting that I ever went to, this guy that had significantly more clean time than me, like, manipulated his way into my car and then was asking me about my preferred dick size. Like, real inappropriate stuff like that. You know what I mean? I had less than a week clean. I didn't know any better. And it made me really uncomfortable. And, like, thank God that, like, I didn't let people like that scare me out of the rooms. And, like, I continued to keep coming. But anyway, there's, like, a lot going on with this topic. We have 6 and 7, willingness, and then the fact that this is, like, a women's rep. So I'm going to do my best to stay on topic and to tell you a little bit about what it was like and what it's like now and, like, how I got here. So my clean date is 4/23/13, and so this year we celebrated 6 years, which is really unbelievable. I have a hard time believing that, one, I'm 6 years older than when I first got here, and that, like, I've been able to, like, stack days for 6 years. I didn't think that I would be able to, like, put 2 days together when I first came around. So it's just amazing that's possible, because I really didn't think that was possible. So I'm not actually from this half of the state. I'm originally from the King of Prussia area, which is, if you don't know where it is, it's near Philadelphia. And it's a little bit different out there. People are, like, I don't know, a little bit more hardened. We don't have a Pittsburgh left, because that's definitely, like, a Western PA phenomenon. People are not as fanatical about their sports. I know when I first moved out to Western PA, a lot of people wanted to know if I was a Flyers fan or an Eagles fan, and it was, like, very much a sticking point, and I'm not. I don't care about sports. That wasn't important to me. But I grew up with two parents. They're still married. I have one older sister. My childhood, like, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but my childhood for the most part was, like, pretty normal from the outside looking in. You know, we were, like, middle class. There was a period in time, like, where I was on Medicaid, and my mom was always, like, a really vocal person, and if she thought that something was unjust, she would tell you about it. So when we would go to the doctors and we'd have Medicaid, she would, like, tell people about themselves if they would question, like, what kind of insurance we had. And she was the kind of person that didn't have an issue getting loud in public and like, embarrassing the shit out of me. And, like, she was also the person that, like, I would hear her laughing across the grocery store. She was just, like, this lively, like, gregarious, friendly person. She could make friends with anyone. And, like, when I was a kid, that embarrassed me, but, like, now looking back on it, like, she had a lot of qualities that, like, I embody today and that I identify with as, like, being a strong woman. Like, she's not afraid of, like, other people. She's not afraid to make eye contact. She had a zest for life, you know? And, like, that's the kind of woman that, like, I want to be today in a lot of ways. So, anyway, skipping ahead a little bit, I moved to Western PA in 2011 for a guy that I was seeing in Slippery Rock, and that obviously didn't stick. But one thing about my story, like, that I sometimes dance around, but I'm going to say very plainly, is that, like, there's nothing I'm not, like, allowed to say, right? Swearing? Okay. I was, like, swinging from dick to dick. Or vagina to vagina. Like, whatever it was, like, in my using, like once I started having sex, like, that was how I operated. You know what I mean? So it wasn't that big of a deal for me to, like, latch onto a guy and, like, move across the state 5 hours away. And, like, I thought that that was okay. And the thing about that relationship that was, like, super unhealthy was, so, I can't believe this is where I'm going, but this is where we're going with this. He was really into BDSM, and there's nothing, like, right, wrong, or indifferent about that, but what was problematic for me was I was codependent, and I allowed him to hurt me, and I never, like, would use the safe word. I would just let him do whatever he wanted, like, so there weren't, like, any limits or boundaries on it. Like, sometimes he would catch it, like, after I'd been crying for some period of time. He'd be like, oh, we need to stop. But I wouldn't speak up for myself. And that is, like, definitely a theme for me, like, in terms of, like, defects that I carried with me into the rooms was, like, codependence and, like, not knowing how to use my own voice, and not knowing how to, like, advocate for myself, or not being willing. No, I didn't know how. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to ask for, like, what I wanted and what I needed from other people, whether it was, like, a sexual relationship or otherwise. And so that was, like, really uncomfortable. And, like, he would, like, really hurt me to the point of, like, bleeding and, like, shitting myself. Like, it wasn't, like, oh, like, a little bit. It was, like, a lot. That ended up ending. But recently in my home group, we do this thing where I promise this is going to connect, I swear. We open up the Living Clean and we just flip to a page. And, like, whatever that page is, like, we read about it. And that's, like, the topic for the meeting that day. Not that you can't share other things. And 2 weeks ago, sex was the topic. I don't know if you've ever read that section. But it's pretty heavy duty. And when I shared, I talked a little bit about that and how, like, that's something that, like, I've had to learn how to do in this process, like, how to speak up for myself in relationships and, like, what I want and what I need. And, like, after the meeting, a woman that had known me for some time, she was also a home group member, she said that that surprised her about me, that, like, I was that kind of person that, like, didn't know how to speak up for myself or wouldn't ask for what I wanted from, like, a man or a woman. And I thought about that a little bit and, like, why is that? And I think that's because, like, I've always tried to be, like, someone, like, who reaches out to other women, because it's so important for us to do that, I feel like, and I was sort of raised that way, and, like, I'm involved in other things, like, outside of NA that are about, like, women coming together. Like, that's always something that, like, I've placed a lot of value on, but then, like, I'm not necessarily practicing it, or, like, I haven't always known how to practice it. So I guess that's why she was surprised, just because of the way I present myself, and I'm always, like, trying to, like, get in touch with, like, who I am as a female. And I've, like, had, like, a lot of struggles with that, not just, like, what I shared about, but I also had endometriosis. And if you know what that is, it's, like, a whole thing. And having the surgery for that, and then, like, having to, like, speak up for myself in that way, not just, like, in relationships, but in terms of what physicians were and weren't willing to do for me. Like, there's just been a lot of times where I had to really push to get what I needed. I'm trying to not let this blow away. I'm doing my best. And it was really hard. And I'm going to go on a tiny soapbox here on this, and I'll move on. But it takes the average woman, I think it's 7 to 10 years to be diagnosed with endometriosis, because in Western society, women just aren't believed. If they say that they're in pain, they're told that it's hysterical, they're hysterical, their pain isn't real, it's just invalidated. It took me about a year to get the surgery to get diagnosed. And that was a really difficult thing, to not be believed. When I actually had the willingness to speak up for myself, I was basically silenced in a way, So I feel like all of that kind of connects with the topic, because I had to be willing and humble to keep opening my mouth and keep asking for help. And that's something that I've had to do in this process, especially with 6 and 7. 6 and 7 were difficult, but I feel like by the time I got to 6 and 7, I had a lot more willingness than I've heard other addicts share about. I've heard a lot of addicts share about how much they struggled with 6 and 7, and I struggled so much with 4 and 5 that by the time I got to 6 and 7, my defects were painfully apparent. I knew exactly, I had a very clear idea of what was going on there. And because I let step 4 work me, and by work me, I mean I sat on it. Well, I was on it for about 14 months. I switched sponsors in the middle of it. It was a mess because I allowed it to be a mess. So all my defects were popping up, perfectionism, procrastination, not speaking up for myself. There was a lot of fear. Every time I would even open the step working guide and try to work on it, I would just start to tear up and just sob, because all the anger and resentment was just so painful and so fresh for me at that time. And that was not something that I knew how to process or deal with. And what was really going on is I didn't want to look at my part in it. I just wanted to blame the other person and not take accountability. And that's because of another defect that was pointed out to me in a very loving way by my sponsor when we went over 4 and 5, which was being a victim, which was really apparent in how I connected with other people in those relationships, right? That guy that I was with, when I wouldn't speak up for myself, I was being a victim, right? And that was really hard to take a look at. But by the time I got to 6 and 7, because 4 and 5 were so difficult, I didn't work them out of the step working guide, really. My sponsor, when I switched sponsors, she had taken me out of the step working guide, because it was just tripping me up, because I was making shit a lot more complicated than it needed to be. And so she just would really simply tell me what was next. I needed to do what was right in front of me. In the way that I oftentimes have to practice recovery is I have to simplify things, because my brain will run away with me, and it'll project to this horrible outcome that's when I objectively look at it, it's not really possible, but I'll decide that it is, because it's really thick still sometimes between my ears. So for step 6, she had me take a look at what my defects were. I had to make a list beyond what was identified in 4 and 5, and what the defect was, what I liked about it, and then what my life would be like without it. What could possibly change to try to give me that little bit of hope, that little hope shot, that just to shed a little light on it. Not we're going to get rid of it, but if we did, what would life be like? So an example of that, in my current life would be, because all of my defects have not been removed, I have not been cured, not by a long shot. I got a tattoo yesterday, a rather large one. If you really want to see it, it's covered right now, but I can pull up my pant leg. It's my entire right thigh. And, they put this medical dressing on it afterwards so that I could come here and come camping without it being an issue. It's called Tagaderm, if you know what that is. And I thought it would be okay to take a shower this morning, right? I was it'll be fine. I just won't really get it wet. I won't scrub it. It'll be great. It was not great. A little bit of water got in under it, And so I texted the artist, and I was like, is this okay? Like, I think it was just water. And she's like, send me a picture, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, there's definitely soap in there. Like, you need to come in. And I'm like, am I still going to be able to go camping? She's like, if I put more Tagaderm and we clean it, like, you'll be all right. But so I proceeded to, like, this complicated my whole morning because I had procrastinated packing to come here. And I was just, like, super emotional. I'm, like, on the very end of my period right now, which, like, might seem like whatever, but because I have a medical condition, endometriosis, like, my mood swings can be, like, really bananas. And, like, that's something that, like, I've had to come to accept and, like, find love for about myself. So, like, I'm driving to this tattoo shop, and I'm just crying in the car. And I'm, like, beating myself up a little bit, you know, like, you made this poor woman come in on a Saturday, blah, blah, blah. You're going to be late for the retreat. You're not even going to get there on time to speak. Like, all of this, like, the bat. I'm just swinging the bat, you know? But, like, the miracle is that, like, I didn't have to hang on to that for the whole car ride. The car ride was probably about a half hour. I probably cried for, like, 2 minutes, like, the length of a song, and then, like, prayed and, like, moved on. And, like, that's, like, the blessing of, like, having worked 6 and 7. Like, yes, I still have these defects today, but, like, they don't have to run my life, and then I have to run my whole day. And it didn't have to ruin my whole day. Which, like, might not seem like a big deal, but, like, that's a big fucking deal. Because, like, if that had happened to me, like, pre-working step 6 and 7, I probably would have thrown a pity party and then, like, gone home and, like, taken my ball and gone home, like, not even shown up here. You know what I mean? Like, pre-NA, like, it would have been a wrap. Been, like, a dark room, like, and then I'd, like, get to throw, like, this whole victimhood about how, like, I couldn't go because this, that, and the third. Like, life is so hard. All these things happen to me, you know? Can anyone relate? Good. So then for step 7, it was really similar. It was supposed to be, like, how is the defect showing up in my life, like, in this moment, like, when I was working it, and then, like, what's the spiritual principle that I can apply to it, and then, like, what else can I do to, like, help remove this defect, or, like, when this defect comes up, like, what else can I do so that it doesn't run my life? I spent a little bit of time this morning, maybe this is why I was running late, like, looking over, like, my step 7 and step 6, just to, like, refresh, because it's been a little while. And most of the time, like, the spiritual principles that were there, like, sometimes it was, like, willingness and humility, but there were other ones, too. Like, there was a lot of, like, love involved. Like, a lot of the defects that I carry center around fear and just, like, self-loathing and just, like, beating myself up. And, like, the solution is just to, like, love myself and, like, have a little bit of grace for myself. You know what I mean? And, like, to show myself that loving kindness that, like, I'm able to show for other people, but I have a hard time showing to myself. And that's something that, like, my sponsor has, like, tried to impress upon me. And not tried. She's done a really good job. She's a fabulous woman, if you know who my sponsor is. She's solid. But, like, if I say mean things to myself, she'll say, be kind to my friend Alicia. Like, be kind to her. Say nice things to her. You know? And it's like, shit, that's so hard. it's so much easier for me to be kind to other people than it is to be kind to myself. So that was, like, basically, like, what my 6 and 7 process looked like. And the other thing that I did, like, in terms of, like, having that willingness to turn over my defects or my shortcomings, well, I did a few things because, like, I have to complicate things. And, like, sometimes it's helpful, like, to have more than one solution. So one of the things that I did was praying. The third step prayer was, like, always super important to me, and, like, when I was on step 3, and then when I got to step 7, I wanted another prayer, and I didn't really like the one that I found on Google, which is an AA prayer, and, like, if you're into that, cool, good for you. That wasn't for me. So I wrote my own, that, like, helped me, and that, like, this is a prayer that, like, I still use today, and, I'll share it with you. Fill me with your divine love. Give me awareness and willingness to release my shortcomings and take them as you will so that I can see your will for me and give me the power to carry that out. So that I already feel calmer. Prayer is just something that's always been really powerful for me, and taking the time to write a prayer like that and to memorize it and to use it on a daily basis was really helpful for me in working 6 and 7, and like even now, like when defects pop up, like another place where my defects still pop up is when I'm driving. So I live in the east end of Pittsburgh, and I drive a lot for my work. So I don't know how familiar you guys are with Allegheny County, but I'm an in-home family therapist by day. So I might start out my day where I live in Wilkinsburg. I might go up to West Deer, shoot down to Clarendon, go to McKees Rocks, and like around and around. So I spend hours in the car. So sometimes, some days, I'm like really good at it. I'm like, I got a really good playlist on Spotify or a podcast I want to listen to. Like, it's going to be great. I leave on time. Everything's gravy. It's fine. Like, nothing can get me down. I don't care about the traffic. I'll let that guy cut me off. It doesn't matter. Other days, I'm running late. I'm pissed. I'm hormonal. And I want to kill everyone. And I ride somebody's ass. And I'm honking and, like, flipping them off. And, like, okay. It's okay. But it's, like, a really good reflection of, like, where my spiritual condition is at. And, like, if my defects need to be checked. So I end up praying a lot while I drive. Which is really a good thing, because I'm hoping to get a different job, but if I don't, like, I have acceptance that, like, this is where I'm supposed to be, and that there are a lot of lessons in that, and a friend of mine was, like, giving me a hard time about that, and like, yeah, you really need to work on your driving. She was making a joke about it, because the one time somebody, like, cut us off, and we almost wrecked, wasn't even, like, on a busy road, it was, like, on this little road in Squirrel Hill in the middle of nowhere, not in the middle of nowhere, but, So yeah, it's all a work in progress. I was going to say something, and I like lost my train of thought. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So another thing that was helpful for me when I was working 6 and 7 was, like, besides praying before I would write and just praying throughout my day to, like, work on the defects, was finding ways to, like, get myself grounded and centered. One of the things that I do outside of the fellowship is I teach yoga, and I don't think I had started teaching yoga yet when I was on 6 and 7, but, like, that was something that, like, helped me to, like, practice that love for myself and, like, finding ways to meditate and ways to, like, connect inward and like, really, in a way, connecting outward. Because, like, when I'm doing those things, I'm able to, like, be a more engaging person and be more genuine and authentic when I am around other people. I'm able to, like, make eye contact. I'm able to listen and not just, like, wait until you're done talking so that I can talk back at you and, like, not respond to anything that you said, which is a really challenging skill. Sometimes I've gotten better at it, at listening, but, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm running out of things to say. I'm really honored that I was asked to speak on this topic, and, thank you all for listening.
Thank you, Alicia. And I'd like to introduce the second speaker, Christy M. from the Friday Clean Connection Group of NA. And there's no area listed.
Lawrence County.
Area. Lawrence County.
Hi.
Thank you.
This is a super fun situation.
Hi, guys. I'm Christy. I'm an addict.
Thank you to the committee for asking me to come share. And like Alicia said, this is such an honor. Women's rap, so exciting. I was really excited to share on the steps 6 and 7. I have sponsees going through this right now. So I'm really having some time to reflect on this for myself where I was. Hi! Oh my gosh, my whole life is here. I'm so happy. Distraction. You can add it to my list. I'm just so excited to like reflect on where I've been with Step 6 and 7, and I get the opportunity to share that with my sponsees. And then I kind of, you know, as you do that and you start sharing with your sponsees, you know, you get the opportunity to start reflecting where you were and where you are now, and think about where you are now, and think about where you might be when you go through Step 6 and 7 again, because the steps obviously do not stop. You don't do Step 12, graduate, and then hope that you carry every memory and every lesson with you every day. You have to keep working them and keep peeling back that onion and keep growing and keep developing. So it's been really interesting lately because I've been thinking about my character defects. And then so I'm asked to share a little bit about them and a little bit about the spiritual principles, willingness and humility behind the steps. And those are very important because that's what I struggled with and found the most awareness with through this step work process from the beginning. For some reason, when I was using, nothing was my problem. If I was having a bad day, that was your fault. If I didn't have what I needed, why aren't you getting it for me? You know, and if I want what you have, well, hand it over. Like, I'm entitled. My ego's in the way. It was always in the way of myself. I expected things. And it's not like I was a princess. You know, I grew up in, you know, middle class family. I was taught good values. We didn't have a lot, but I had everything I needed. I had good parents. You know, we had our dysfunctions like everybody else. Things we're not proud of. But for the most part, I was a good girl. I had great grades. I was in everything. But I also had my own character defects. And I had very strict parents. So some of my character defects were allowed to show themselves, and some of them were very private. I don't know if anybody's experienced that when they were young. And then when they move out, then their character defects come alive. And that's what happened to me. Somebody set them free. Somebody opened that cage and said, hello. And so I come out, and life is just everywhere. And I just took advantage of absolutely everything. So character defects run wild. And I didn't even know that those were character defects. I'm like, this is me. This is who I am. I'm like, I can't change because this is who I am. Not realizing at the time, so young, so ignorant, that I didn't realize that I was making these decisions. I was choosing to do these things. I was the one choosing to behave and act upon these character defects in this way. And I was making myself who I was becoming. So we're just going to skip ahead to a story. And I'm going to tell you in the beginning that this was not my bottom. However, it should have been. I was talking with my wife. She's like, you got to tell this story. This is so perfect. And 9, almost 10 years ago now, I was arrested. Cops came to my door. And I was like on top of the world. For about a year and a half or 2 years before that, I was a makeup artist. I was a Mary Kay consultant, and I worked for a contractor full-time nearby who built large houses on a lake in Pennsylvania. And there's a lot of big money, and I was his ace. I was his A1 office manager, assistant, the whole thing. He trusted me for 4 years with all of his personal bank accounts. He trusted me with all the business bank accounts. He trusted me to help him with 2 businesses. Mind you, I had my business degree. Somehow using, I came up with the strength to get that far. That was God.
And he trusted me to borrow his condo in Florida, take his convertible down, take my significant other at the time, you know, and do all of these things, these errands, make these trips, and do all these business transactions for him. And I had this amazing idea. What if I used his business to support my business? Oh my gosh, he would never know. And then, with good intention, I'll give the money back. Now, I'm using at this time. So in my mind, it doesn't even occur to me that half the money is going to go to drugs or alcohol, anything that has to do with anything that has nothing to do with what my main purpose was. Because I had something, somewhere to blame it. You know, somewhere to put it, some way to justify it. And I started taking money out of personal bank accounts. I took money out of the guy's paychecks. I took money out of their bank accounts. I was stealing money right from people right in front of their faces. I ended up embezzling over $40,000. It took them almost 2 years to catch me. And I just lived life like it was normal. I ended up being like the highest seller in Mary Kay. I even went through the pretend thing where they give you a crown on stage and you're like, oh, yay. I'm like, I've never been a princess before. This is exciting. I'm the queen of sales. Yeah, I'm the first woman probably ever in the life of Mary Kay to get fired. I still have the letter. Man, what an amazing company, though. Please don't get fired from them. They deserve all the respect. And I didn't realize that my character defects, everything I was doing, all the consequences that came from the actions and the behaviors that I decided to do because of my self-centeredness was going to hurt other people. You know, I did not know that the girl who signed me on underneath her was going to lose out on her percentage and all the money that she was gaining from me selling all that stuff. She had to give it back. She has kids. She has a family. I had nobody but myself. And then the woman above her had the same issue. These people can't be a Mary Kay anymore because they can't afford to be because of me. I took away their livelihood. Oh, and that's just a piece of it, because then, you know, then there's the employer I stole $40,000 from. And I'm not one who would steal things. You know, I had my moments as a kid. I'd go in the mall with my friends and we'd steal some jeans or a t-shirt and, you know, and then we'd try to get away with it, and I was lucky so far. But in reality, though, where did that lead me down the road? If I can get away with the small stuff, I can get away with the big stuff, and it all helps me out. In my head, it's a survival skill, because in my head, I wanted my own home. I'm like 29 now. I want my own home. I have my own car, but I want a better car. It's time for me to live my life. I'm ready to start a family. I'm ready to do this and do this and do this. And where am I? This is not where I pictured myself I should be. This is not where my parents told me I should be by now. This is not where culture told me I should be right now as a woman. You know? And so I needed more. Money, property, prestige. I needed more. I needed to prove something to somebody. I needed to prove something to myself that I was able and capable of doing these things. And for me to get that money from my employer to put it into my Mary Kay business, my plan was to have this ginormous Christmas sale. I was awesome at putting together gift baskets, and I was going to make this big store, and women could come in, and I was going to sell them all these baskets for their families for Christmas, and they were going to get free makeovers, and like there's this whole thing. And when it started getting closer to time, this is before I was arrested, starting getting closer to Christmas.
Things stopped panning out. They just literally stopped panning out. The venue said, Christy, we can't have you here anymore. So, you know, we have another event that's conflicting with your schedule. I wasn't getting the product in as fast as I needed to. I wasn't getting the time in that I needed to wrap all the product up so it looked real nice for the event. The invites weren't coming out. The newspapers weren't displaying my ad. I had this huge stock room full of $10,000 worth of stuff. And I started getting sick. Really, really sick. Physically sick. Stress ate me alive. Because I was in a place where, in my life, I would run myself down to the ground. I would let stress take me so far, I'd end up in the hospital. That happened to me many times. Many times. I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetic, so I'm insulin dependent, since I was 20. And I know that's what stress does to me. And because I kept letting that happen, today I'm on disability because of it. That's frustrating. I'm only going to be 40 in December. That is not where I want to be health-wise. So it keeps me, and it brought me a lot of limitations, physical. And that gives me, you know, emotional, spiritual, a lot of limitations and boundaries. So I'll talk a little bit more about later on how I don't let that get to me as much as I can. But back to my story. I'm getting sick. I end up in the hospital. I am this close to death. My sugars are all over the place. The doctors can barely keep me conscious. I lost so much weight. I was so thin. I was very frail. My dad came in to see me. My parents didn't even know what was going on. I had to take time off work, in which time the books needed done because it was the end of the year. And I was the one who usually did them. Guess who hired an accountant to come in and do the books? I couldn't cover my own ass this time. I couldn't even get us by. I could always get us by. Guilt ate me alive, literally. And my character defects were still growing. You think I'd be like, oh, so I surrender? No, I wasn't giving up. I was like, okay. Okay, see, my significant other did not know that I was doing this. I was the only one who knew this was happening. I didn't tell a soul. Because if anybody knew, they'd go down with me. And this was my way of telling myself that I wasn't hurting anybody. But all I was doing was hurting people. I just didn't want to tell anybody else that I was hurting all these other people. Kind of backwards, right? But that was the truth. That was my thinking at the time. So when the police came to my door, I'm out of the hospital just a couple of days. And they're like, they asked me if I would come down, turn myself in. I go, what for? It was like January 1st. I'm like, why are you working? You know? Oh, that's not glued on. He's like, well, we're going to give you the opportunity to cooperate. You decide if you want to come down. I got dressed. I went down. So I'm planning my lie the whole way there. I go there. Cameras are on me. They have a stack of bank statements and paper trail. And after I gave my lie, they hand it to me. And then I'm like, fuck. So I turned myself in the right way. Then some of my assets came in that I was real mad to have at the time. And I'm like, okay, I can be honest. Let's just get this over with. And I was honest, truly honest for the first time, bawling. And I'm like, yes, I did it. But I just said what they had proof of. Of course, I wasn't over honest at the time. So I just let it go into fruition for what I could. They let me walk out. I had my written statement, all of that, you know, returned my work clothes, everything. I lost my job, obviously. Then I had to go home. I had to tell my mom. I did not lose my mom. Because that's a big deal. Because I was waiting for a court date, and I was also waiting to go to jail. And we're talking felonies. I got 5 felony charges for this. And I had to tell my significant other, I was kicked out. I lost my home. I had nowhere to go. I lost all my belongings. I lost my car because I had no way to keep my car. I was still making payment. I had nowhere to go. I had nothing I could do. I had the clothes on my back. My character defects were like, let's use. I had some money left. You know, let's not waste that. We got time. I got 6 months before my court date. So I found a friend and moved in with her. And then my character defects were so self-centered that I made more mistakes. And I acted on them incorrectly. And there was no living in a solution. It was living in a solution for me because it helped me answer my questions. It helped me fill my needs, the needs I thought I had. It helped me, you know, get what I wanted. It didn't help the girl who was helping me out. It hurt her children, some of the things I've done. It even put me in jail again. Like, these things are not okay. But I'm going through them like this is like normal life. This is not okay. I wasn't grown. I wasn't raised like this. You know? But I made myself turn into this. You know? And then I go to jail and I do my 6 months. And I should have had 7 years for each felony. I ended up being convicted of 2 out of the 5. And because I showed up with 10 grand and I returned all 10 grand of that stuff that was in that room, Mary Kay's check came through the day before my court date. I was sweating the whole time. God was like, serves you right. I was like, who do you think you are? And so, I mean, it was just bad. It was just so bad. It was so bad. I went into jail this thin. I came out this bad. Like, it was great. 6 months, man. But I should have been there so much longer. But because I showed up with money, and it's a money-ran system, and it was my first offense, that really helped me out. Other than, like, DUIs and small things. But that wasn't my bottom. You know, there's so much I should have learned from that. So much behavior I should have seen in myself and where I was going and what I did to myself and what I did to other people, because I really did feel that guilt. I really did feel that remorse. I really did have that compassion for others. I just couldn't see in the moment that I was affecting people. All I could see was my hurt, my pain. You know? So the defects of character just grew, and it grew, and it grew as I grew up. And it grew into things that I started doing things that involved every single one of them. So when I finally got into recovery, there's like 1,000 stories in between all this, right? So like this is like a big story. This is like my going to jail story. And I didn't quite get it when I got out of jail. I got on probation. I had 4 years of probation. I was supposed to have 7, so I got off 3 years early. I got 3 years early. It took me a year, and I got a public drunkenness during my probation, and another weekend in jail. Graduated drunk on alcohol 2 times. All of that before I hit NA up and started finding a way. Before I surrendered. Before I admitted my powerlessness. Before I came so desperate and the pain got so great that I finally found a new way to live. Because I didn't have any other choice. It was either living or not living. And that's where I was. That's how desperate. That's where the pain had to get for me to find a bottom. I'm grateful that I don't see others around me have to get that far. I don't want anybody to have to get that far. But that's where I had to go. So when I came into NA and finally started the program, it took me a while to understand, like, who are you and what are you going to do for me that I can't do for myself and I don't need you really. But then I, you know, my mind started to change. I started doing step work. I started communicating. I started participating. I just started showing up. All those character defects are still here. All of them. Some of them show up less often. And I'm like, that's weird. Because that's who I am. Like, they belong there. That starts to get uncomfortable. You start seeing things disappear. You're like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be angry right now. Why am I not cussing you out for saying that? Or, you know, whatever reason. And it's just weird how you start to change before you even know why you're changing or that you're supposed to. And then as you keep going in the program and you start doing more steps and you find what being powerless means and you find out how to connect with something greater than yourself and give that a chance, give yourself a chance. And step four, you really start to document your behaviors and your patterns and your behaviors. Now, these behaviors are what you did in response to your character defects. We didn't get to your character defects yet, but we know what you're doing because of your character defects. But in step six, we are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Well, let's talk about those defects. You know, they're not going to go away on their own. If you could make them go away, you would have done so already. This is where your sponsor gives you that reality. They're like, well, I could get rid of that. Well, why didn't you? Oh, I don't know. Like, that's just the way it is. It's funny like that. And then sometimes you're like, I'm so comfortable with this. I really like being rude. Like, being rude is like, that's my bag. Like, if I wasn't rude, who would I be? You know, and I've had people say stuff like that to me. Like, I love when my sponsors tell me this, because then it reminds me of what I said to my sponsor. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish you were there. And I'm like, well, pretend like you aren't rude. Pretend like you're, like, nice and stuff. Or polite. Or have manners. Like, check that out for a minute. See what you think. Just try it. I give you 5 minutes. And they're like, well, it's all right. But I don't know. You know, and, like, these things, like, we're so attached to them because they're comfortable. We're comfortable with those crazy things because we don't know any different. We basically trained ourselves to where they're habits. You know, we live with them all the time. So we're so attached to who we think we are. We don't realize what we did is not who we are. And this is a step that really shows us that and separates that. You know, this is the step where I learned me being, you know, like a real felon convict is not really who I am, but it sure as hell is what I did. And that's not okay. So, but in the step six, you've got to be entirely ready to change. You're going to have your list of defects. You're going to have your list of assets that you're going to go over with your sponsor or with someone you trust. You know, you're going to share that with somebody. You're going to share that with your higher power. Although, remember, your higher power was there the whole time. This is just you chiming in and being like, okay, I know you're there, so let's just do it while I know you're there, you know? So being entirely ready isn't just, you know, saying you're ready. It's not like, okay, I'm ready to remove these defects of character. Are you? Are you really ready? Do you really believe that's even possible? And then you're like, I know I was like, no, God's great, I think, but I don't know, because you're not sure. You just got to be entirely ready for yourself. Your higher power's got this. You don't need to tell God how to do his job. He knows exactly what he's doing. Him, her, it, they, all of it, universe, pick your favorite higher power. Just something bigger than yourself is going to help you get through this, because we can't do this alone. I needed something. Me alone is scary. Me alone is destructive. Me alone is bad news. But a fun time. But bad news. Bad news. So, I've learned how to be a fun time clean, and I'm okay with that. So I use my character defects for good, not evil today. So, to be entirely ready is like, what it is surrender. It's willingness. That's where the willingness really comes in. You have to be willing to surrender. Willing to surrender your fears. Willing to address them. Willing to acknowledge them. Willing to have awareness of them. Unfortunately, this is not a step you're going to be done with when it's done. This is a lifelong step. You might be willing to surrender your fear of this right now. You may ask your higher power, please help me get rid of this. And you have your daily prayer. And you'll work on it, because all you can do is just for today. You can't be hard on yourself. I am so hard on myself. I got to take it easy. I'll make myself sick. And when I'm sick, I'm keeping secrets. When I'm sick, you know, I am in the hospital. I'm spiritually voiding, you know, emotionally crazy. And I'm a mess. I'm all over the place. If I want to stay centered and grounded, I got to stay connected. I got to stay connected to what's healthy for me. If I feel like my character defects are getting away from me, it's important that I'm aware and I can see them and I can and be like, okay, I see you. Now, what am I going to do? Am I going to behave or react? Or am I just going to put you back in my pocket and be like, we'll talk about this later? You know? Because that, you can do that. Or you can be like, listen, God said he's going to remove you, so until he does, you're going to go in the waiting room. You know, like, that's possible. So, like, it's not going to be erased and just poof, disappear. You know, because it didn't for me. I have a lot of things I'm still working on. A lot of character defects. But, I don't have fear that keeps me away from things anymore. I have healthy fears that keeps me moving forward, but with caution. You know, I'm not afraid. I don't give up on myself anymore. And that might make me nervous, and I might carry a little bit of fear. But that's fear and anticipation at the same time. Because I'm still unknown, but I see possibility. I see opportunity. It's just in a positive light and change of perspective. And there's just so much you can work on with your character defects. And I've worked on so much with mine, and I'm going to be working on forever. So I'm going to share with you one more thing about this, and then I'll talk about step 7 for a minute, and then I'll let you go. But when I did my character defects, I tried to bring the notebook. I didn't bring the notebook. I had no problem writing character defects down. I was at a place where I was like, listen, take it all. Desperate. I wrote down 7 pages, double columns. And then I was talking to my sponsor, and she's like, so how you doing? 7 pages, double columns, and I don't know if I'm done yet. She's like, stop. I go, all I'm finding out is that I'm a big piece of shit right now, and I'm not sure this is okay. And she's laughing at me. But at the same time, she's like, Christy, sometimes admitting that you have character defects is not, you don't have to go that far. Some things are the same things. I go, no, but they're all for different reasons. So I'm going through, no, this and this might sound alike, but they are 2 totally different things in my book. So we had fun going over them. It was very interesting. And, I learned a lot about myself. She learned a lot about me, too. So
that was really fun. And today there's a lot more humor in that. But I have awareness of those character defects. So when they show up, I don't automatically react to them. I can think about them and I can put them back in my pocket if I need to. Or I can, if I do react to them, I can also live on a solution to help correct them. And, you know, things are done differently today. And so I do things in a more positive light and as a better person. I don't recommend that. That's a lot. Unless you have a really healthy sense of humor. Because I should have been crying. I was like, what am I supposed to do with this? How am I supposed to feel? I didn't even know how to feel about it, you know? But in step 7, we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. So you can replace him with your higher power of choice. And I don't beg my higher power to take them away. That doesn't make it happen faster. That doesn't make it happen at all. Because there's more to it than that. It's more connecting with your higher power because there's action behind the steps. It's you doing the work to be aware of your character defects when they show up. It's your choice on, are you going to move forward in a positive direction to react to your character defect? Are you going to put it away? Are you going to change how you respond to it? Because if you don't make any change, you know, because if I didn't change how I respond to it, I would have never got myself out of jail. First of all, I wouldn't have got myself out of any of those situations that I explained to you or any of the other ones. I'd be continuing my behaviors, continuing repeating the same behaviors over and over and over, that insanity all the time. Until I did something for myself, how is my higher power going to help me? Because that willingness is there. But I got to recognize that I'm not perfect and I can't expect perfection. You know, I have to have humility. Humility is in all of this. And that's such a powerful spiritual principle because I'm human. I'm human. I'm expected to have character defects. I'm expected to never be perfect. I am expected to make mistakes, but learn from them. And that's okay. And it took me a while to understand, like, that is okay to make mistakes and to learn from them and to grow. Like, I didn't have to pretend, like I used to, that, oh, I never make mistakes. Oh, I didn't do that. You know, because I didn't want you to know that I was failing in any way. Because if you thought less of me, then I was less. And that's not the case. That's not the case. You know, I am going to get angry. I am going to be rude. I am going to be nice. I am going to be emotional. I mean, we are women. We're women and we just need to fly that flag. Because we are who we are. And we should be proud of who we are in our own skin. And that's so important. And that's, I've learned that in this process. I've learned that I can be who I am today. I don't have to wear the masks anymore. I can make mistakes in front of people and be like, oops, I can own my own mistakes. But I can also live in a solution and fix them. And learn from that and share that with others. And be supportive to others and have compassion for others when they're making mistakes. And be more understanding to others when they're, you know, misunderstanding something that I used to misunderstand. We all go through it. Our journeys are just different. You know, and I am stay connected to my higher power. You know, I stay connected to people. I stay connected to this program. It's just been a real blessing to me. I've been in a lot of situations where I felt less than. I felt like I wasn't enough. You know, I felt like my character defects took me places that didn't even make me worth it.
worth it. What does that mean? Like, being worth life, worth living on this planet, worth sitting by you. Didn't matter what you look like, what you had. I wasn't worth it. And today, I can proudly just make you feel worth it with me. And that makes me feel good. That makes me feel good, because we're all worth it. And I just want to thank you guys for sitting here and listening to me, and for being here for me, and just thanks for letting me share. It really meant a lot to me this afternoon. Okay.